This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. To create a composite picture in poetry of Black American culture, that's the ambition of the new Oxford Anthology of African American Poetry. It includes a mix of famous and forgotten, popular and obscure poets. My guest is the editor, Arnold Rampersad. He's also the author of a 2-volume biography of Langston Hughes and is a professor at Stanford University. Arnold Rampersad, welcome back to Fresh Air.
Thank you very much.
We've spoken on the show about Langston Hughes. You've edited a collection of his poetry. You've done a biography of him. Let's start with a poem by Langston Hughes, which you've included in your new anthology. And why don't you introduce this poem for us and tell us how you think it fits into this larger collection of African American poetry?
Hughes wrote this poem when he was 19 years of age. It's the first poem he published in a national journal in crisis in 1921, and it became his signature poem. He either closed or opened every one of his hundreds, maybe thousands of readings with this one. I think it's an important poem because it epitomizes Hughes's way of creativity, especially in relationship to race, his love of Black Americans before it was fashionable to do so, and his attempt in here, in this poem, to subsume African American history and African history into an affirmation of the beauty and spirituality and historicity of the people at a time when all of those things were being routinely denied.
Why don't you read it for us?
The Negro speaks of rivers. I've known rivers. I've known rivers ancient as the world and older than the flow of human blood in human veins. My soul has grown deep like the rivers. I bathed in the Euphrates when dawns were young. I built my hut near the Congo, and it lulled me to sleep. I looked upon the Nile and raised the pyramids above it. I heard the singing of the Mississippi when Abe Lincoln went down to New Orleans, and have seen its muddy bosom turn all golden in the sunset. I've known rivers, ancient, dusky rivers. My soul has grown deep like the rivers.
Arnold Rampersad, what was your approach to choosing the poems that you wanted to include in this anthology of African American poetry?
I was asked not to do a chronological-based anthology, but rather to come up with some other idea. And I said, well, I'd like to do an anthology that amounts to a portrait of Black America, a self-portrait of Black America, as seen, as created by its poets. And so I divided the poems, all of them, all million of them, as it were, into about 14 or 15 categories. For example, the difficulty of being both Black and a poet in the English language, or Africa, or the South, or slavery, the Black man, the Black woman, death, spirituality, music, deliverance, what I took to be the great and take to be sort of the great topics of African American poetry. And then I had to choose the poems, and I suppose there are many poets who should be here and are not here, and for that I'm deeply sorry. But I decided that I would include many poems by one poet, if it helped me to achieve my desired effect. I want each poem, and sometimes you have a poem from the 19th century next to a poem from the 20th century, I wanted to achieve some kind of tension and juxtaposition, a sense of dynamism, as out of the collection would emerge, as I've said, as I hoped, a portrait of Black America that was authentic.
You read for us a poem by Langston Hughes, who's a very well-known poet. I'm going to ask you to read a poem by one of his contemporaries who's lesser known, much lesser known, I think, a poet that you include in the book named Fenton Johnson. Would you talk a little bit about him and why you've included him?
Fenton Johnson was Chicago-based. He came on the scene around 1910, 1911, 12, thereabouts. He was associated with poetry magazine, Harriet Monroe's crucially important magazine for all of American poetry. And he was the first African-American poet to look squarely at civilization and modernism in very, very broad terms. He was at the right time, in the right place. Poetry magazine was publishing, of course, T.S. Eliot, Ezra Pound, and others. And so he produced some a body of work that really there had been nothing like it before in its modernity, in its attempt to grapple with the meaning of the world after World War I in particular.
Let me ask you to read a poem by him, and would you introduce it for us?
This is Tired by Fenton Johnson, and it expresses his feelings about the world about him, the swiftly changing world about him, but there's a particular perspective that's not recognizably, not definably African-American, but I think it is there. And I will now read it. Tired. I am tired of work. I am tired of building up somebody else's civilization. Let us take a rest, Melissy Jane. I'll go down to the Last Chance Saloon, drink a gallon or two of gin, shoot a game or two of dice, and sleep the rest of the night on one of Mike's barrels. You will let the old shanty go to rot, the white people's clothes turn to dust, and the Calvary Baptist Church sink to the bottomless pit. You will spend your days forgetting you married me, and your nights hunting the warm gin Mike serves the ladies in the rear of the Last Chance Saloon. Throw the children into the river. Civilization has given us too many. It is better to die than to grow up and find that you are colored. Pluck the stars out of the heavens. The stars mark our destiny. The stars marked my destiny. I'm tired of civilization.
How come you think he was not better well known?
It's a mystery. But I think that if you compare him to Langston Hughes, the difference is that Hughes would take the same sense of protest, if you like, of outrage, but he would convert it into affirmation, into a poetry of affirmation, of lyricism, of praise, in praise of black culture, black beauty, black humanity. And I think, therefore, Hughes's poetry, certainly among black Americans, became more precious than Fenton Johnson, who seemed in many respects to be outside of the culture, operating in a way that that made people perhaps admire his work, but not embrace it in the way that that they embraced the poetry of Langston Hughes.
One of the things I really like about your new collection is that it's introduced me to poets who I was not familiar with, such as Cornelius Eady. Would you choose a poem by him and read it for us?
Well, Cornelius Eady is a wonderful poet. He's just moved to the University of Notre Dame, and that's fortunate for that university. He has many books of poetry. Let me just read one called The Wrong Street, and it's about, I suppose, how one discovers the absolute reality of one's blackness, especially if one is a man, in relationship to the potential for violence that's always there, physical violence, but really emotional, spiritual violence from which many of us do not ever fully recover. This is The Wrong Street by Cornelius Eady. If you could shuck your skin and watch the action from a safe vantage point, you might find a weird beauty in this, an egoless moment, but for these young white men at your back. Your dilemma is how to stay away from that 3 to 5 second shot on the evening news of the place where you stumble, or they catch their second wind, or you run up to the fence and discover you are not breeze or light or a dream that might argue itself through the links. Your responsibility is not to fall bankrupt, a chalk-marked silhouette faintly replaying its amazement to the folks tuning in, fist to back, bullet to midsection. Your car breaks down and gives you up. A friend's lazy directions miss the restaurant by 2 important blocks. All of this happened. None of this happened. Part of this happened. You dream it after an ordinary day. Something different happened, but now you run in an old story. Now you learn your name.
I'm going to ask you to choose one more poem for us and tell us about the writer.
I remember many years ago I stumbled on the poetry of Etheridge Knight, who is fairly well known in the poetry world and among African Americans, and a very unhappy life, prison, drug abuse, and early death. In some respects, a sort of classic poet's life of a certain kind, but really tragic. A lot of suffering there. And out of this suffering and this prison life and this sort of deprivation of humanity came just a beautiful body of verse that I think stands up very, very well as the decades go by. And the one I like above all is The Idea of Ancestry by Etheridge Knight. And I like it because while it is written as from a prisoner's point of view, a person down low, the person seeks to remind himself that he is human, remind us that he is human by looking into the past and remembering, you know, from whence he came and the connections that are essential in order to define one's humanity. The Idea of Ancestry by Etheridge Knight. 1. Taped to the wall of my cell are 47 pictures, 47 black faces. My father, mother, grandmothers, one dead, grandfathers, both dead, brothers, sisters, uncles, aunts, cousins, first and second, nieces and nephews. They stare across the space at me, sprawling on my bunk. I know their dark eyes, they know mine. I know their style, they know mine. I am all of them, they are all of me. They are farmers. I am a thief. I am me. They are thee. I have, at one time or another, been in love with my mother, one grandmother, 2 sisters, 2 aunts, 1 went to the asylum, and 5 cousins. I am now in love with a 7-year-old niece. She sends me letters written in large block print, and her picture is the only one that smiles at me. I have the same name as 1 grandfather, 3 cousins, 3 nephews, and 1 uncle. The uncle disappeared when he was 15, just took off and caught a freight, they say. He's discussed each year when the family has a reunion. He causes uneasiness in the clan. He is an empty space. My father's mother, who is 93 and who keeps the family Bible with everybody's birth dates and death dates in it, always mentions him. There is no place in her Bible for whereabouts unknown. 2. Each fall, the graves of my grandfathers call me. The brown hills and red gullies of Mississippi send out their electric messages, galvanizing my genes. Last year, like a salmon quitting the cold ocean, leaping and bucking up his birth stream, I hitchhiked my way from L.A. with 16 caps in my pocket and a monkey on my back, and I almost kicked it with the kinfolks. I walked barefooted in my grandmother's backyard. I smelled the old land and the woods. I sipped corn whiskey from fruit jars with the men. I flirted with the women. I had a ball till the caps ran out and my habit came down. That night I looked at my grandmother and split. My guts were screaming for junk, but I was almost contented. I had almost caught up with me. The next day in Memphis, I cracked a croaker's crib for a fix. This year there is a gray stone wall damming my stream, and when the falling leaves stir my jeans, I pace my cell or flop on my bunk and stare at 47 black faces across the space. I am all of them. They are all of me. I am me. They are thee. And I have no sons to float in the space between.
Arnold Rampersad, thank you so much for reading these poems for us. Thank you very much. Arnold Rampersad is the editor of the new Oxford Anthology of African American Poetry and is a professor at Stanford University. Here's a composition by Charles Mingus called Sketch 4, performed by the Mingus Dynasty Band. Mingus composed this piece at the end of his life. This track opens with a recording of Mingus singing the melody. ¶¶